This sucks.
It blows, it sucks, it does all sorts of bad things.
Hey everybody,
to us on
I'm
a weekly
Mike.
Basis. I'm okay. JB. Welcome back.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I mean, we can just continue to talk over each other.
That was
playfully.
My plan. I was going
to
say go ahead, and then as soon as you started talking, I was going to jump in.
And here
this
we go.
Is awkward.
That was so good. All right, so we're back. This list still sucks, and
particularly this week.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, like. But if you want to heap loads of shit on the same records that I want to heap loads of shit on, it'll be fun.
I don't know that my shit heaps are going to be quite as substantial as yours, but we will see.
I've been blocked up. I've been stopped up for
a while,
at least the past 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. So you're ready to unleash it.
I've been solidly stopped up since Tuesday.
Wait, are you being serious right now? We can take a break if you.
Well, Tuesday is when I listen to Brian Eno's fucking meandering green world. Fucking meandering turd green world. World. I don't know what the fuck it is.
Another green world.
Yeah, I guess. But we're not there. We're not there. We shouldn't necessarily talk about that yet.
We'll cross that world when we come to it.
There's crucially important things that are happening.
Today?
Listen.
Or on the list.
It feels like today is the start of it, because obviously we're way earlier than what we normally are.
You may have noticed.
And we're so early this week because we're gonna get the show done and we're gonna fucking go listen to live music.
We are.
Yep. We're gonna fucking go listen to live music.
For the first time. At least at an indoor situation for me this year.
Oh yeah, fucking A.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've been to one outdoor, maybe one or two outdoors, but this is the first indoor one.
Genevieve and I took Victoria to Oktoberfest last year, and that was like outdoors at Waterworks Park, where it was like a car concert is what
okay.
It was.
Yeah, who was playing?
Jerry's band, Pianopalooza.
Okay, yeah.
Pianopalooza was doing it. So it was Jerry and Tony up there fucking off. Playing fun.
Is that just them? It's just two piano players?
Yep, just dueling pianos.
They do good shit. They're good musicians.
Dude, they are.
If you're local in Des Moines,
yeah,
go check them out.
If you're into it, like, definitely go check them out. Definitely check out Pork Tornadoes, too. If you
Such
like
a huge catalog, too.
Cover bands. Oh, from Jerry and Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. They know a lot of fucking songs.
They sure do. Yeah, you can pretty much just request about anything, and they will know it.
Yeah, and they'll look it up on their little iPods of death.
Yeah.
And they'll jam it out for you.
They'll do it. They'll do it really good, too.
Yeah, but that was, that was probably the last time that I went to an outdoor one. And, yeah, indoor live music, I mean, it's just been a hot minute, so.
We're excited.
Yeah.
Dude, so that's why we're starting excited. Early tonight, because we're going to head down there to the Gas Lamp. So if you're listening, meet us down there.
Yeah, go down to the Gas Lamp. Say hi. Say what's up.
Yep.
Be like, yeah, this does suck, you guys. but then tomorrow, Johnny Novocaine, your cover band, has
yep, one of my
a
bands
gig.
Is playing out at a festival in
Which
Tama.
Super awesome.
Should be fun.
And then more live music tomorrow night in downtown Des Moines.
That's right.
Relating to the art festival.
Indeed. Yep. So, Here Come the Mummies is playing tomorrow night. We're excited about that too.
Dude, I'm so excited about fucking seeing live music again.
It feels too good to be true.
I know. But it's not. It's really going to happen.
It's a real life. Yep. Yeah,
it's real
Unless
life.
The show is sold out tonight when we get there.
That's not.
I shouldn't have even.
I don't believe that that's a thing.
I don't think so either.
And
I was just making a joke.
Thing, and if it is a thing, I feel like I have enough money in my wallet.
We can make it work. Yeah. I just thought that'd be so funny. So
Fire Marshal be damned.
We're talking about it on the podcast. We're so excited we get down there. It's like sold out.
A bunch of people, and a bunch of people show up too. They're like, "Yeah, we heard about it on the podcast. What the fuck?"
They
you
said
guys?
It'd be wide open. Yeah.
Tickets.
And then we lose all our listeners.
Okay, so live music is back, so be sure to go out and support your local live music. Did you listen to any new music this week?
I did not.
My day, it's been one of those days. It's been a really, really crazy busy Friday, which I normally don't do those. Like, normally my Fridays...
Your Fridays are easier.
...are fucking chill normally, but this day was just...
I'm going to at least pull it up so we can see what came out today.
That's a good call.
Oh, there was a new Modest Mouse released today.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
The Golden Casket.
God damn it.
Seventh full-length studio release today.
That makes me so sad.
You like Modest Mouse?
I do like Modest Mouse, yeah.
And then a bunch of shows. Oh, there's a new Doja Cat album today, too. That's kind of cool. You remember Doja Cat?
Yeah.
I don't hate her.
I don't hate her either. Yeah. Actually, she had one of the catchier songs that...
Yeah, what was that song called? We did that on the list of the top songs of 2020.
Yes, because it came up under the top
songs. Say So.
Say So.
That's a good song.
That's a great song, dude. Super catchy.
There's actually catchy. Quite a few. There's a new Tyler, the Creator album today.
Wow.
New Mountain Goats album.
Yeah, there's a dude. There's Doja Cat playing big list. Yeah. My bad. My bad for shortchanging you Friday.
The Tyler, the Creator album has 100 rating already.
Yeah, right. Fuck you.
At least on Metacritic.
There just hasn't been enough surly people like
there's
us
one,
to listen
there's
to
one rating.
Yeah, there's one yeah. person.
And it was one guy's like, yeah, 100. That was pretty good.
It was his mom.
Yeah. Oh, it's Tyler's mom. Mom, the creator. Mom.
Tyler's mother, the creator. That's which, right. I mean, for her, like, it's fitting.
Yeah, super she fitting. Did create Tyler she the Creator. She did create
Tyler the Creator.
She was the creator of Tyler the Creator.
Okay, so with that being said, get out there, listen to new music, because yep. there's clearly lots of presumably good new music that's out for you today. But I say let's jump into this.
Let's do it. So, again, we always recap for those who...
Yep.
They're just walking in blindly off the street.
Thank you.
We are going through Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. 5 albums per episode. We're picking it up today at number 340.
340 from 1993. It's Snoop Doggy Dogg's first album entitled Doggy Style. Rolling Stone says, until Snoop Dogg came along, no one in rap and hardly anyone in rock realized that an aloof whisper could be more intimidating than a shout. Snoop never gets heated. He takes the same tone when he's menacing a cop as he does with a woman who's soaping his back in the tub. Emmanuel Dean and Dr. Dre's Sterling G-Funk production on Gin and Juice and Who Am I, What's My Name ensured enormous album sales for the D-O-double-G's debut and his laid-back Indo-flavored tales of life on the streets of Compton.
Hell yeah.
This fucking album is a stone-cold classic.
Indeed it is. And honestly, I hadn't listened to a whole lot of this just because a lot of this early hip hop stuff was, I mean, I was 2 years old when this came out. So, I mean, obviously I listened to Snoop Dogg and I've listened to several of these songs, but I don't think I ever really sat down and listened to this whole album. Yeah. Ooh. I mean, a lot of the older ones I have, but yeah, this is one that I really haven't. Of course, I've listened to The Chronic and all that, which is kind of a sister album to this.
Very much so.
They're kind of considered to be that. But yeah, so this was a pleasure.
Because it's crazy, because when I was reading about this album, he released The Dogfather was his next release, and The Dogfather sounds so different than what this one did.
Is it not as G-funky?
It's not as, well, I mean, the G-funk element is still there, but it's missing all of that production from Dre, and it's because basically after Dre recorded and released The Chronic as well as Doggy Style, that's when he broke up with Suge Knight. And he was like, fuck you, I'm
that's
leaving.
What Dre did was after Doggy Style?
Okay. After Doggy Style. And so that's why when The Dogfather came out, like totally different production crew. And that's why it sounds so different from the way the Doggy Style sounds.
Do you think that one's going to be on the list? The Dogfather, I mean?
No, fuck no.
No, not at all.
I don't think we see another Snoop record, honestly.
Yeah, probably we'll probably see some Snoop features. I mean, we'll see The Chronic, so.
A ton of Snoop features.
Yeah.
Yeah, a ton of Snoop features. And obviously The Chronic's going to be on here. The Chronic's going to be super high, but.
Probably top 100.
Yeah, I mean, at least 150. I think it should be top 100.
I bet we'll be.
I definitely think that it's one of the more influential. So digging into Doggy Style, though, it's rare that you get a skit followed by like an intro song.
Yeah, he was not afraid to do that. And it was not a terrible skit. I mean, it's Snoop in the bathtub with a chick and she's rubbing his back just like they talk about. And
she's then like a bath.
A party kind of shows up at his house like right at the end of that.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the intro track, which is track 2, is literally like an introduction. I mean, it's an introduction to the G-Funk era, right?
Yeah. I mean, they say so at least. But there was a little sample at the very end of Bathtub, which is the opening track that leads into the intro, that it was a straight up Curtis Mayfield sample.
Okay, like, so is that what that was?
Yeah. It's like from the Superfly album. I can't remember what song it's off of. It might even be like one of the basic ones, like Pusher Man or Freddy's Dead or something like that.
Okay. But that's awesome though.
Yeah. I picked that out right away. I love that other one. I love that record.
And then listen, at the heart of this, you get fucking unbelievable classic Snoop Dogg. Gin and Juice.
Gin and Juice.
I mean, what else? So what else besides Gin and Juice? Did you give anything else 5 stars?
Yes.
Ooh, what else?
G's and Hustlers.
This is for the G's. And
this is for the hustlers. This is for the hustlers. No, back to the G's.
I gave that one 3 stars. I do love G's and Hustlers a lot. I love For All My Niggas and Bitches, though. Who I Am, What's My Name, I put 4 stars next to that.
I put 3 next to that.
I did a lot of 3s on this. I put 3 stars next to Lottie Dottie. Lottie Dottie is a fucking banger of a track.
That's one of the ones with Nancy Fletcher.
Yes.
Yeah. She's great.
She's really good.
I love that line.
She appears multiple times on this record.
I love that when line with Snoop's like, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the baddest of them all? And they're like, you conceited bastard. I love that shit.
Most notably, and if you're not familiar with Snoop, I think the thing that makes Snoop so fantastic is his flow was so unorthodox.
Yeah. And his vocal, like, there's no aggression. There's no, like, sharpness. He's, like they said, he's very laid back.
He's like,
maybe he's just too stoned.
Even if he's menacing the police, right?
Yeah, like, he's just like, hey, guys.
Come on, step back. I'm gonna fucking, take it easy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna fuck you up.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when you get to the very last song on here, there's actually another skit that's embedded in Pump Pump. And that might be one of my favorite skits on this record.
Yo, bitch chose me. You know the drill.
Yo, bitch chose me. I'm Sam Snead.
That's right.
You better recognize.
That was the one with... No, that wasn't the one with him as a kid, was it?
No. But that one was fantastic.
Was that Doggy Dog World?
That's G's and Hustlers.
That's G's and Hustlers, yeah.
That's the skit in front of G's and Hustlers, is like the little kids in a classroom. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a straight hustler. You better act somebody.
You better act somebody.
Love that.
I do too.
One of my favorite, I love the line in Doggy Dog World. Knick-knack, paddywhack, I still got the biggest sack.
Which, by the way, so Doggy Dog World was a video growing up that was a really, really cool video, but he also made a video for Gin and Juice and for What's My Name. And I think What's My Name was the lead single off of this album. And so that's probably why I put 4 stars next to it, just because it's really good. And I remember how big of a single that was.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, because it was coming after everything that Dre had done with The Chronic. And it was. Like, it was a really, really big deal.
Nice. Know? There's good shit on here. I think that once we get to this album on the whole bonus episode playlist deal, it's hard not to choose Gin and Juice, right?
Yeah. Actually, yes. Yeah. For a playlist, for one song.
For one song off of this.
And this is the anti-Let It Be, right? Because Let It Be, I'm going to have all types of arguments about why we should pick the lesser known tracks. But yeah, this one, it has to be Gin and Juice. And
I don't even care. No question. Yeah.
Yeah. It absolutely belongs on the list, right?
Definitely.
I already had it as might part even of my be, digital catalog.
Yeah. Yeah. It might even be low. I was trying to think about that. But comparatively to a lot of the other big hip-hop records, we haven't really got to... I mean, I still think the most criminally low one is All Eyes on Me. That is terribly...
So far.
Yeah. So far. Yeah.
So far, but, I agree.
I mean, just the fact that 6 Kanye albums are above this one is a little crazy to me.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I think this is too low as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's too close to Drake.
Way too
close to Drake. And
there's
a Drake album that's way higher than this.
Oh, God. Don't tell me that shit. I'm going to be out of town that week.
Yeah.
So
I will too.
You just, okay. Yeah. We'll just skip that week.
We'll just skip that week.
Yeah.
Or we'll skip like one of the records that
week. Yeah. Just be like, oh, something's messed up on our computer screen. We can't see that one. Okay. Should we read Rex's thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Okay. Doggy Style from Rex Todd. I was hoping that this album wasn't overlooked. G-Funk opens up this wonderful time capsule of South Central in the early 90s. I could probably just listen to the instrumentals for this album and be happy. Shout out to Dre there. Yep. Mm-hmm. Each track is perfectly paired with its featured artist. This album was an instant classic when it was released. He don't love them hoes, but I love this album.
Speaking of Rex. No.
Speaking of featured artists, we were talking about Pump. What is that? Lil Malik? I don't know how to say it. There's like a 16-year-old kid that was a feature on that last
seriously
on that last track.
I didn't even make note of it. Yeah, make note of it.
There's
a ton of really great features from Corrupt, from the Lady of Rage. Like Lady of Rage appears a couple of different times on this record, and all of her flows are really, really good. This album, it's a really, really good album.
Yeah, check
it's
it out.
It's a really good album. I don't know how low I'm going to say it is, but
I don't think it's 100 spots low, but I think it's 20 to 30 spots low. And
I'd like to see it closer to 300.
More than I think this is low, I think that some other ones are too high. You know?
Yes.
I think there's just some reorganization that he's done because this list sucks.
Booyah.
Okay. As we know.
Let's move on.
Not even going to let it finish.
I know. Wow.
I just wanted one little trombone. What?
All right.
That's it.
Listen, y'all knew what was coming.
Yep. Okay. Should we move on?
Yes.
Okay. Coming up at number 339 is Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814 from 1989. Janet Jackson bought a military suit and ruled the radio for 2 years with this album. Along with producers Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, she fashioned a grand pop statement with hip-hop, funk, Rhythm Nation, slow jams like Love Will Never Do Without You, and even hair metal, Black Cat. While writing Rhythm Nation, I was kidding around saying, God, you guys, I feel like this could be the national anthem for the 90s, Jackson recalled. Just by a crazy chance, we decided to look up when Francis Scott Key wrote the national anthem, and it was September 14th, 1814. Interesting. I did not even read into the title at all, so that answers my questions.
Were those the only questions that you had outstanding?
About the title?
About the title?
Yep. What'd you think, Mike?
I love this record. Like, I was super excited to see Janet Jackson because it feels like now when we get to the list, when we get like just a pure pop album, I get really excited because I think to myself, okay, it's this high on the list for a reason. So it's got to be really, really good. And I was not disappointed with this at all. I loved it. What'd you think?
I liked it a lot too. So you weren't familiar with it?
I mean, I was familiar with
songs.
Yeah, I was super familiar with seven songs because there were seven fucking singles from this record that came out.
Yeah, there were quite a few. What was your favorite like single off of this record?
Listen, Love Will Never Do Without You is such a fucking banging good track. But I also love Escapade.
Escapade was good.
I love Escapade. It's got to be between one of those two. Probably Love Will Never Do Without You because that beat is so fucking good. And literally when I hear that song, I just think about the music video. That's all I do. I think about the music video because it's like her in a tank top on the beach in France or somewhere is where they made that music video. And so I think about the beat with that song and the way that she was dancing in the music video. And there's some weird dude in like a giant circle that's like rolling.
Like down. A hamster ball?
No. But like two-dimensional, right? So a circular shape, but this guy is literally like holding himself around it and like the circle's moving. I could be totally making that up too. But I don't think I'm making that up.
Yeah. Well, I got to check this video out.
I mean, you probably should
probably
if you
will.
Haven't seen it yet.
Yep. By far my favorite song and the one that I gave the most stars to was Black Cat.
Is that just because of the guitar?
No, because honestly, I was turned off at first. I was like, oh, what's this cheese ball, like 80s hair metal guitar?
That's it almost what I was sounded like
out of
you.
Place.
I know.
It sounded out of place. It was like, what is this? But then as it went, I realized I knew the song. I knew the chorus. The chorus is fantastic. I'm a sucker for crowd vocals. I've said it before and I'll say it again. So I love the crowd vocal chorus on that. It almost sounded like Lady Gaga-esque to me. Like, I think about, like, Trash Like Born This Way and stuff like that. And I'm like, this is where that sound came from, was this.
Absolutely. You
know? And so I fucking loved it. That was a banger for me. A great guitar solo, actually, once I kind of got over the...
So who played guitar on that?
I did look it up, but I can't remember. But I can find out right now.
Because it's not a standout. It's not...
It's not like Stevie Ray Vaughan or something. Yeah.
Oh, Marley.
Marley, it's okay, buddy. Calm down, buddy.
It'll be just fine.
We promise.
Normally, we take JB's animals and we sequester them into the back room.
But we forgot to do that today.
No, we just wanted them to be together.
We want them to be out here with us. So, hi, Marley. There's a guy named David Barry.
Okay. There you go. Listen, David, you fucking smashed it, dude. Thank you, David.
Subsequently became the touring artist or the touring guitarist for Janet and the tour director.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, he fucking crushed that part. And that song is wonderful, dude.
Yep.
Like, I didn't give it as many stars only because, like, it feels so gimmicky to me.
It did feel that.
And I know that it's not.
Yeah, because that was my immediate reaction, too, but I kind of came around on it. That song I gave 4 stars to. I'll be honest with you, there were no 5 stars songs on this record for me. This is more of a 2 to 3 star kind of record, except for the Black Cat, but just as a whole, it's a great fucking collection of songs, and it you know, it definitely belongs on the list.
So I put 5 stars next to Love Will Never Do Without You because that fucking song is just so iconic. I put 4 stars next to Escapade. I put 4 stars next to Miss You Much. I put 3 stars next to State of the World. I gave 4 stars to Rhythm Nation too,
yeah,
because that song just rips, dude.
Rhythm Nation is good, and the other cool thing about this is. The songs are kind of interspersed with these little interludes that come between a lot of the songs, like little spoken lines. And some of them have some really, really little one-liners almost, but like really deep thoughts, you know?
This record is way ahead of its time in terms of social justice and in terms of like Janet Jackson trying to bring...
That's what it really is.
Dude, there's there's a track on here where one of the skits in the interludes is them referring to a school shooting from way back when in California. Like
before, living in a world they didn't make.
Yeah, before school shootings were a fucking thing like that. Because I remember when that school shooting took place and it was like, what the fuck is happening in
this world? It was like
world?
A really out of there. In these days, you know.
And now we're just like, oh,
another
yeah.
one?
Fuck. Another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking another one.
It's obviously, but it's terrible. But
it is.
I don't mean school. Obviously, school shootings are sad. What I meant by it's sad is it's sad how normalized it. You know,
yeah. How normalized, how desensitized we are to it. And so Janet Jackson was trying to bring all of that shit out to the forefront. This is a fucking great record, dude.
Yeah, she had a couple little one-liners that I even wanted to like read. Like there was one track called Interlude Race. And it was one sentence. It was, we are in a race between education and catastrophe. I was like, that's a pretty, I like that. And then it just was like next song. Profound. That was all it was. And then at the outro, the very last line on the entire record is, in complete darkness, we are all the same. It is only our knowledge and wisdom that separates us. Don't let your eyes deceive you. Pretty cool. I mean, I got goosebumps when I listened to that for the first time.
For sure. I'm right there with you. What do you think about placement? Actually, so did you add this to digital since you weren't super familiar with it before?
I didn't add it to digital, but I would listen to it again, but I'm not going to do it on the reg.
Are you going to hunt down the vinyl of Doggy Style?
Of Doggy Style? That's
the one thing we didn't talk about.
I might potentially do that, yeah. Do you have that?
No, I don't have it on vinyl yet, and I'm not going to worry so much about it because my son Michael desperately wants it on vinyl now.
He's
going to
get it for you.
Yeah, I'll just borrow Mikey's. I'll just borrow Mikey's if I need to listen to it.
How about Rhythm Nation? You going to get that on vinyl?
I would love to find this on vinyl. I would love to find it on vinyl, and I added it. I did add it to my digital just because like the hits and the back half of this album to me gets really, really weak. But the songs particularly, and for the record, we haven't talked about this either, but Janet didn't write most of this material. Like most of the really, really big songs were written by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Yeah,
which is just fucking unbelievable tag team talent. They're fucking wizards, yeah, right?
For sure.
And they did some serious wizardry with this record. So
they did good shit. So
if I can find it on vinyl, I'm gonna pick it up. I'd pick it up on vinyl.
If I see it, I'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I probably won't seek it out. But.
Do you want it to move up? Do you want it to move down? Are you good with it? Where it's at?
Either good or maybe move a little tiny bit down. Okay. But I don't want to move it up. How about you?
I like it where it's at.
Yeah.
I probably like it where it's at.
And I could easily be convinced of that too. So.
Because there's going to be other stuff this week that makes room for...
We got plenty of room for Janet Jackson, huh?
All right. So let's talk about it.
You want to read Rex real quick?
Oh, yeah. I will read Rex. Okay, so Rex says, whoa, 1989, shit, I thought this was released in the early 90s, my bad. The opening moments of almost every track sound identical with the drum beat breakdown. It does have lots of hits on it, but it just doesn't do anything else for me. It's a good album, should be closer to 375 or so. So he must have dropped it a little bit, but not significantly. And he recognizes the hits.
He is a little bit right about the opening moments thing. A lot of those do kind of sound like the drum beat, like the 80s drum beat with tons of reverb on the snare in particular.
Snare reverb.
Which there's some more of that coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. 338 from 1975, which is a unique year, which I haven't encountered yet.
Whoa, that's a long way off.
I know.
We're never gonna get a listen to this album.
We're so far into the future. Thank you, Rolling Stone.
Wow, Rolling Stone editors.
I'm such an asshole. From 1975, Brian Eno's album Another Green World. Rolling Stone says, after years as a rock eccentric with Roxy Music and two groundbreaking solo LPs, Brian Eno was exploring new ideas about ambient music. But he said goodbye to song form with this album of pure synthetic beauty, mixing lush electronics in Be Calmed with acoustic instruments. Everything gets merged with the night. To cast a truly hypnotic spell, Eno's work habits were pleasantly subversive too. At one impasse during the recording, he pulled out a cake from underneath the mixing console and served pieces to everyone in the studio.
Sweet. Who doesn't love cake in the studio? Mike doesn't love cake in the studio? Or just cake from Brian Eno?
Dude. Listen, this record is fine. There's nothing wrong with this record if that's what you're into. But the idea that this is the 338th greatest record of all time is fucking laughable.
That's how I feel. Well, I feel similarly about it's a couple totally of the laughable. Albums this week. Like there are a couple albums this week that I'm like, you know what? Like I'm glad I listened to it. It wasn't a total waste of my time by any means. But just it being on this list is a little hard for me to wrap my head around. Although I didn't hate this one at all, to tell you the truth. I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff going on. And obviously we feel a little bit differently about that. But I didn't hate it as much as you. Did you just, there were no gems. The entire album was just a flop to you.
No, listen, St. Elmo's Fire.
Yep.
Like I put a star next to St. Elmo's Fire. Like that song was cool. Everything Merges with the Night is actually really, really a cool song.
That was a really, really cool song. I agree with you. I wrote down that was my favorite tune on the whole thing. Definitely that was very Pink Floyd-y to me.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like Mother by Pink Floyd in particular.
Yeah. This also features fucking great artists too.
Robert Fripp.
Dude, Robert Fripp is on multiple...
A lot of tracks, yeah.
...tracks here. Phil Collins plays drums on multiple tracks here.
Yeah.
I don't think I wrote down. Percy Jones was the bass player on a bunch of these tracks too, and so.
And they totally hit the nail on the head when they said abandoned song structure. There are a couple songs that do have a traditional structure, like Everything Merges with the Night is kind of a verse chorus kind of situation, but a lot of the other ones are much more soundscapes than songs. Which that's kind of his thing. He's an ambient producer. He likes making weird noises and he likes making sonic adventures and kind of taking you on a journey, you know.
Which I'm I'm way into that type of music.
Yeah.
What I don't get is the placement, though.
Yeah, it's that's almost ruined it for you.
Understand why you're saying this particular album is so good at the ambient music thing. I mean, whatever, right?
I guess you have to look at the time period that it came out. I mean, it goes back to the impact versus content thing, and I think this is probably more of an impact album for them.
But the crazy thing is that even in reading this, like what I read about this album was that most people really didn't like this album when it came out.
Really?
This was one of those things that like critics went back at after like 5 years later or 10 years later.
One of those sleepers.
Yeah. And they were like, man, this album is really, really good. Go back and dig into it a little bit more. And then people did. And I don't know. To me, it's just it's missing something for being this high on the list. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it definitely does. That being said, there were some gems for me. Like I liked All Come Running. That was a good one. Except for I was a little unsure on the chorus. Like once they got to the All Come Running to Tie Your Shoes thing. I don't know if that's a little too whimsical for me, but I liked the build up to the chorus on that song a lot. There's some good chord progressions going on there. A lot of really, really fucking interesting instrumentation. Did you look into the instrumentation section at all?
Oh yeah.
I think a lot of these had to be just jokes. Seriously. Cause like I wrote some of them down. Like for Another Green World, Brian Eno on desert guitars. What the fuck is a desert guitar? That's not a thing. There's no such thing. On Sombra Reptiles, Brian Eno on electric elements and unnatural sounds. That was the instrument that he played on that. Okay, and then like there were some that like Golden Hours. It said Robert Fripp on Wimborne guitar. Wimborne is just like a region of England or something. Like I don't know what that meant at all.
Okay, because again, like I went down these same rabbit holes, but I couldn't necessarily find an end to any of these rabbit holes either.
Yeah. I think there's not one. All right. There's not an end. One that was an actually real, sorry, everybody. Marley's having a hard time here.
Marley's very concerned, everybody.
One that was an actual real instrument that I was kind of surprised by is on Little Fishes, there's Brian Eno plays what's called a prepared piano. Have you ever heard of that before? This is literally just a fucking piano that you like throw bolts and screws into. Or like it's so the description is a piano that has had its sounds temporarily altered by placing bolts, screws, mutes, rubber erasers, and other objects between the strings. And in the pictures, like they just like basically took the strings of a piano and like shoved a fork in there. Now it's prepared. Yeah. So.
Well, thank goodness somebody prepared his piano for him.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, I'm not against what you're saying about it being too high on the list. I think that's probably a definite sure thing. Marley has a lot to say about Brian Eno, guys. He's really upset about our take.
I think he is too.
So,
or he totally agrees with us.
Or he totally agrees, and he's just he's just kind of.
I can't figure out which one it is, but
do you want to read Rex's thoughts on that real quick? And I'm gonna set Marley outside. Yeah,
you can help Marley find his people.
Talk to him about Brian Eno a little bit. I'll be right back.
Yeah, because Marley needs to find his people. Okay, so Rex's thoughts on Brian Eno. He said, over the first 2 1/4 tracks, I thought this was a composition album and nothing more. It's kind of an exciting album. You can tell that at the time it was experimental. This is probably the album or artist that inspired Radiohead or Blue Band Group. It's pretty cool to listen to, get your work done, and get lost in the music. Rex, that's totally fair. And you know, the cold listen when I was listening to this record, I think I was looking for a reason to hate it.
The Brian Eno one?
Yeah, and I don't know why I was looking for a reason to hate it. I mean, honestly, dude, I was walking, I was on a treadmill, and I remember I said out loud, I was just like, I can't fucking believe this. Because it instantly made me think about the Flaming Lips, is what it made me think about. Because if you're going to have a record of just like filled with crazy, weird ambient noises, or like kind of, I don't know, the songs that he was putting on here, this is where Yoshimi battles the Pink Robots. Yeah. This is a great spot for Yoshimi battles the Pink Robots. It's electronic. It's experimental in nature. Like, it's super fucking weird and out there, but it also has unbelievable songs that people can listen to on the very first time and like get really attached to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you like what he's doing. You're just not pleased with the songwriting as much. And do you think it's way too high? That's your complaint. Like, yes. You wouldn't just, if I was just like, hey, listen to this Brian Eno record, you wouldn't be like, fuck that album. It's the worst thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
No, of course not. I didn't know. I don't have that reaction to it.
Yeah.
If you said, all right, where does this fall on the list of the greatest 500 records of all time? I would say
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Is that what you would say?
Yeah.
So you want it off the list entirely?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it has a place on this list.
Did you read Rex already?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. Yep. And Rex was down. I mean, he wasn't like for it or against it, and he didn't say anything. He didn't offer any placement necessarily.
I didn't hate it. I totally agree it's too high, though, and I wouldn't be opposed to putting it at towards the bottom of the list. Just because of the impact that this undoubtedly had on ambient producers in general, you know, over the years. He's like one of the first to really do it, you know. But I completely get your perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm somewhere in the middle. Definitely that's not right. With Rolling Stone, with this being 338. So, because that's high. Let's talk about another one that probably, well, yeah, we'll talk about that one in a little bit. But 337 is Bob Dylan. John Wesley Harding from 1967. Mm-hmm. Recovering from his 1966 motorcycle crash, Bob Dylan made a left turn into country fables and stark mystic folkways. He took a quick trip to Nashville and banged out John Wesley Harding. It's his most ominous album, with characters from the Bible and the shadowy side of American history, from I Am a Lonesome Hobo to All Along the Watchtower. With his stripped-down sound and a black-and-white cover photo, Dylan was defiantly rejecting all the current trends, going his own way as usual.
That fucking... the cover of this album is hilarious, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
He's in the middle. Who are the others?
So I went down that rabbit hole. So two of those people are Native Americans that he met at Woodstock.
On the outer sides?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the dude, like, kind of third back in the middle is just a stonemason.
Just a random stone. They're like, you, come.
I mean, basically.
Yeah. Want to be on a Bob Dylan cover?
Hey, you want to be on a cover of a Dylan album? It's going to be the 337th greatest album of all time. Wow. This is as Dylan as it gets.
Right? Yeah. I mean, except for the real early stuff, because like basically this was his return to his original sound, right?
Yes.
So he did like the Dylan thing.
To folk.
Yeah, he did the Dylan folk, all the songs that you know, in the early mid '60s, and then he went full electric for like a little while.
Full electric.
Which I'm sure we'll get to. We've done one Dylan album before, and it was a much later Dylan album.
It was super late.
Like '90s or something like that, almost, or was it?
No,
like,
it was 2000s.
Was it even that? Okay, yeah.
Because it was super. He was old.
Yeah, like, but that was, but like, he did
an old record.
Yeah, but he did go full electric, which was, we might get to one or two of those eventually. I would assume there's probably a bunch of Bobby Dylan records on here, just because there's so many out there. Such a huge catalog.
We're gonna get Highway 61 revisited.
Yeah.
We're gonna get Blonde on Blonde.
But basically, he went electric, which was like a kind of a. He got a lot of backlash for that.
It was a sacrilege.
Yeah, at the time.
It was a sacrilege, yeah, because he was known as a folk artist, right? And everybody knew him as a folk singer, like the new, like the modern, the new Woody Guthrie, right? Like, he was supposed to be the new Woody Guthrie, but instead, like, when fucking Dylan went electric, like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really fucking
deal. I think it's a badass move, and I'm glad he did that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because it led to really, really spectacular things. But this record in particular was done almost right after the Basement Tapes, which the Basement Tapes, we're going to talk about this here in a little bit. It's coming up fucking next week.
Yeah.
And so while he was doing the Basement Tapes, which was recorded in upstate New York, with some other folks, he was like, you know what? I'm going to take off. And wow. He literally went to Nashville, picked out like a bass player, a drummer, and a piano player, and was like, come on, we're going to record this. Did you realize that this was recorded over fucking 3 sessions, 12 hours?
I did. Yeah. I read about it.
Crazy, dude.
It is crazy. And I definitely didn't hear piano on every track, right?
No.
Is that just okay?
No, that's not just you. And in fact, I think it's rather sparing. Like there's not a ton.
Yeah. There was like one song where I was like, is that the piano? Cause I didn't think I'd heard any thus far. Yeah. So, but yeah. To return to his roots, there is one really, really important song on here in my eyes that, like, you know, kind of spawned a whole lot of cover versions.
Yeah, and the elephant in the room.
It's so probably one of his most popular songs of all time.
But his so All Along the Watchtower from Dylan is fucking great, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean it's really, really good the way that Dylan does it. I love it.
Well, this is the first version of it too. You know that this is like, yeah, he wrote it for this record. Because there's even several other Dylan versions, and then there's obviously the Hendrix version, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't say that I'm super familiar with other versions of Dylan doing.
And it could just be like live versions I'm thinking of or something. But
absolutely. Plus anything like when he, I have to imagine that after Hendrix did what he did to this song, like that's going to impact the way that Dylan ends up performing the song.
I would think so. Yeah. Which is your preference?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, just.
If you had to pick.
I had to pick, I would take Jimmy's.
Same. Hands down every time.
Yeah, but that's not even close.
Just the fact that he wrote it, though. Maybe some of the best lyrics ever written is that song, don't you think?
But you get that throughout this whole record.
You do, because really,
it's so good. Like, storytelling music starts with Dylan.
Yeah, that's really what he is. Like, there's one or two songs on here where it's just like literally the same. Okay, the Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest. Okay. It's 3 chords.
Yep.
The whole time. And they're the same 3, which I'm not complaining about it being 3 chords. And I'm not even complaining about it at all. What I'm saying is it's less of a song and more of just the same repetitive thing over and over while he tells a story over it.
It's a vehicle for him to tell a story.
So it's a story with like a musical backing and not really, there's no structure to it. There's no changes. It's just,
that's right.
It's not a song. It's a it's a poem with, right? You know what I mean? I don't mean that in a bad way at all.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's just funny to hear like a musician vocalize that, right? Because most people, I don't know. Maybe that's inside baseball. Maybe that's not. But it's fun to listen to somebody that like plays music and creates music talk about how simple like that song is. And
that song in particular.
Every fucking... But realistically, like every track on this whole fucking record is that simple too. You know, there's nothing like musically adventurous that Dylan does on.
No, these are stories. These are poems.
Yeah.
Poems/stories.
Yeah.
With simple guitar, but I mean, you gotta love the Dylan guitar. He does have a good feel to his playing. And I mean, not that I can necessarily hear it and pick it out as being Dylan right away every time. But he has a style and he does it well. He's definitely a good acoustic guitar player.
What were your favorite tracks?
All on the Watchtower for sure.
Yep.
I liked I Pity the Poor Immigrant quite a bit. Although I have no idea what the vocals, what the lyrics mean. And there was a little bit more of a structure to that one. So I kind of liked just having a verse and a chorus on that one.
Yeah.
I liked Down Along the Cove a lot. There was actually some electric guitar on that, which is a nice change from the rest of the album. Kind of like a little blues track.
Yep.
Pretty upbeat. And there was piano on that. It was one of the ones where I noticed piano. And then I'll Be Your Baby Tonight.
Dude.
One of the best hooks on the whole album.
I know.
And I love the pedal steel.
The pedal steel playing on that is so good. And I'm a huge sucker for that anyway, but that was one.
Yeah, we both are.
Yeah. I put 4 stars next to I'll Be Your Baby Tonight.
Like, I put 2.
I just love it. Like, that's one of those standout songs for me. I also put 4 stars next to All Along the Watchtower, obviously.
That's a 5-star for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. But then I put 3 stars next to The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest. Like, that story, man. Like, you've got to be willing to go down a fucking rabbit hole of a story.
Yeah. You got to really pay attention to that one, too.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot going on in it. Weird ending.
More so than what you might have to with other, you know, with other Dylan. So
that's right.
Obviously, we're going to get a ton more Dylan that comes up on the list. Are you going to hunt this out on vinyl?
No.
I'm assuming that you don't have it on vinyl already.
I don't. And I have Blood on the Tracks on vinyl, and I would get Highway 61 Revisited on vinyl for sure. But this is, I mean, if I see it cheap, sure. But I'm not going to seek it out by any means. How about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. And I think about All Along the Watchtower thinking to myself, man, it would be really cool to have that,
on song. Vinyl. Yeah.
Yeah, just to have that one track. But I'm not going to go out of my way to find this.
Yeah, I'm not. And honestly, to be fully honest with you, it's not my favorite Dylan record by any means. I think there's a lot that I like a lot more.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
The bass flubs alone are enough.
That bothered you?
Are enough to turn me off.
And
I forgave it just because of how quickly this album came together in terms of, like, you're talking about a handful of hours in the studio is all it took for this album to come together.
So there were not a lot of takes going on. Did you like the tone of the bass?
Oh, yeah.
I like the tone a lot. On the
I like
bass.
The tone
nice
a lot,
and
too.
Round and fat.
It's just weird to hear a flub, right?
Yeah. Oh, with Bob Dylan?
And it's not even that weird. And it's not even like a tough bass line, though. Like, that's the worst part about it, right? It's like, it's not even a hard bass line.
These are not like Jaco Pastorius bass lines.
No.
We should talk a little bit about the harmonica on this one.
Oh.
Did you have any thoughts on that? I can't believe we haven't mentioned that yet. This entire album is just infested with harmonica. And so what I was talking about earlier was
infested.
So like my thing is, again, I've said it a million times. I've explained myself is against unnecessary harmonica, not harmonica that is with intent, which so for me, Dylan harmonica usually gets a pass, honestly. Yeah. Like on a,
he plays really, really well.
Like, he does.
He's a very good harmonica player.
I'm usually pretty cool with it. I was not cool with it on this album. This whatever he was doing with this harmonica, I mean, first of all, it was super pitchy. There are times where he just blows a note that is like, are you even using the right key of a harmonica? And the tone of it, though, is what it is. It's so abrasive.
It's like
an
shrill.
Ice pick to my fucking forehead. Like, especially some of these high notes that he does on some of these songs. It's just like, I mean, I had to like almost take the headphones out. It was, you know what I mean?
Listen, I knew that you would have that reaction. Yes.
Do you not agree, though? Like, it's pretty fucking shrill.
I mean, listen, I'll agree with you that it's really shrill, but it wasn't. It's almost a joke at this point because I know how much it will annoy the ever loving shit out of you.
Well, usually Dylan won't, though. Dylan Harp usually gets a pass, like I said, for me. Doesn't hear.
Listen, the only reason why I think it stood out in the mix, if you will, is just because there's not any other instrumentation to hide it.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have the full accompaniment of the band.
Well, and also just whatever the production on it is obviously super non-existent, really. I mean, it's just like recording. Like, they could have, you know, done something with the technique that they used to record it, I would say. Picked a better microphone. Something about the recording of it is not good. And back in the day, there's no, like, real EQ that you can actually do. But it is an EQ problem, is
so
my opinion.
So much of this was done in the moment, like, and one that, take, one cut.
Usually, like, I think that can do a huge service to an album, but in terms of the harp tone on this, it did not. Like, and I don't even mean that because I know that everyone knows that I have said that before about harmonica, but it's shrill, it's ice picky, should have been recorded either at a further away distance or with a different microphone or something. They should, something is
like
not
a diffuser,
right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like something.
Yep. And it bothered me.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's not your fault. Let me read Rex's thoughts on Bob Dylan real quick here. So Rex says, I love artists that can tell stories through their music. That's the two best parts of any culture. Bob Dylan does just that on this album. Fantastic storytelling with the perfect amount of that necessary harmonica that Bob always brings around to us. This is a great album. The more that I listened to it, the more I started to adore it. So, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Should we hit it? Final record of the night?
Let's do it. Okay. There's only one left. 336. Fucking 336. From pretty 1982, Roxy Music is back with their record Avalon. Rolling Stone says, Peter Sinfield, the producer of Roxy Music's Angular and Wild 1972 debut, said that on Avalon, they, quote, ran out of naivete. Their sound was now woozy and refined, horny yet mature, and unabashedly, unironically romantic. A synth soul landmark. Avalon was their biggest hit, their swan song, and at the height of rock elegance and sophistication. The reggae lilt of the album's title track was inspired by Bob Marley, who had recorded at the same studio as Roxy Music during the 70s. I mean, that counts for something, right? Like, Bob recorded there, so... Fuck. This. Dude, I don't understand the infatuation. I don't understand the infatuation.
With this particular artist.
With Roxy Music.
Yep.
Like, I didn't get it before. And now, you know, listen, we're within 14 spots of one another.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. Yeah, for sure.
And so really, ugh, fuck.
And I've got it from Heather that there are 4 more Roxy Music on this.
Fuck you.
Just kidding, Mike. There's a whole week that's just 5 Roxy Music records in a row for us.
Jesus Christ. I couldn't do it. I would fucking quit the podcast.
You quit.
Like, I would fucking
make
quit
me do
the
that episode
podcast.
By myself.
Shoot, I would fucking quit the podcast. If you told me that there was another one, I might fucking quit the podcast.
You wouldn't do that.
Dude.
You didn't like this one. Did you like this
God
one?
God damn it, dude.
Did you like this one?
Did you like this?
No. I'm gonna agree with you. So, I like Brian Eno a lot more than this. Where are you on that?
No.
You liked this more than Brian Eno?
No.
You just didn't like either one enough to even make a comment.
I don't like either one of them. Yeah. I mean, the Brian Eno record I would take before this one, yes.
There were a couple tracks towards the beginning that I will be honest, I actually liked. Okay. I like the title track. Don't love it, but I liked it. There were kind of a cool little world music vibe to it. Like the reggae thing was kind of a cool touch.
Avalon.
I kind of liked that chorus. Oh, I thought it was not bad. And then
I literally wrote, fuck this chorus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then I liked the space between, which was the one that was before that.
Actually, I put a star next to that.
That reminded me of like Somewhere Between the Talking Heads and the Police. Good harmonies on the chorus. Really, really good bass line actually on
the
that
bass
one.
Line was fucking, it was at least interesting. Like, and then, that was an interesting bass line.
I didn't absolutely hate the first song either. It was like a new wave song, but with a country guitar. Kind of interesting combination. But then it was just a fucking downhill roll from there for me to basically consistently throughout the rest. So like those first 3 songs, I had some hope, but it was all shattered.
It was false hope.
Yeah. Not my thing. Obviously not your thing either.
No.
It's like Talking Heads, but. What did I wrote something down here. I wrote something down.
I would love to hear.
I wrote like discount Talking Heads, but I can't find what I wrote about it. But it's basically just like Talking Heads, but they're like way prioritizing like contrived artiness over like this essence of a song. Like when you listen to Talking Heads, like maybe using some kind of interesting instrumentation and doing some kind of cool synthy arty things, but that's not why they're doing that. That's how they're like dressing up the song that is a good song at its core. With this, a lot of these songs, he just kind of went in there and he's like, now we're going to do this for a little bit. And now we're going to put in a fucking super reverb-y, cheesy 80s sax solo here. And now we're going to just listen to the wave sounds for about 15 seconds. And it's like, there's if you strip away all the production here and all the arty bullshit that you decide to throw in, there's no actual song. There's no actual essence of a piece of music here.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good. I don't like it. I didn't add it to my digital. I'm sure as fuck not going to buy this on goddamn vinyl. And
because I'm getting it for you for your birthday next year. So
no. But this to me, like, this is, listen, if you want to put one of these Roxy Music albums on this list, all right, I guess.
The last one for me. The one that we had before.
Yeah, I would probably take the one before that.
Because you didn't love that one, but you feel way stronger about this one, if I remember correctly.
I'm really pissed. I'm pissed jaded. Because it's at 3:30, dude.
Yeah, that's high.
Like, these are the... This is supposedly, yeah. I mean, this is supposedly the 336th greatest fucking album of all time.
Yeah.
Come on.
None
of these should be fucking duds.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That should be a problem. And
for everybody out there that loves Roxy Music, I'm sorry. It's like, it's clearly a choice thing. It's me, not you, right? All those breakup tropes, dude. Like, all those breakup tropes. And if this is your thing, that's awesome. Like, have at it. But to me, it's not my thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how you're putting it at this place on this list, given everything that you've left off.
All the snubs.
List.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it just, they couldn't decide what they were trying to do, or they were just so intentionally trying to make it so fucking pretentiously arty that it just covered up any essence of what it was actually there, you know? Because to me, it just kind of, they were just kind of floundering around trying different things, and which Rolling Stone describes it as like their mature, polished, refined sound, the culmination of the previous albums. And I'm like, no.
There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
And yeah, I definitely liked the other record before. I don't remember what it was called, but.
For Your Pleasure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, For Your Pleasure. So,
For Your Pleasure.
Let's read Rex.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you. Mr. Todd says, fuck off, Roxy Music. You're taking up too many places on this list that belong to bands like Tool, Heart, Moody Blues. And honestly, like...
Did you see what he said below that?
Good day.
Good day.
The good day salute.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. I mean, there's too much other stuff. There's too much other great stuff that got left off to drop two of them on there. So, And this is something that you and I need to talk about too. Obviously, we have fuck it. Let's preview next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
335 is Bob Dylan and the Band, The Basement Tapes.
Hot damn. 334. Fucking
holy shit.
I know, dude. I'm so excited about this.
That's low.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
Yeah, me too.
I'm surprised that it's come up. So 334 next week, we're going to be talking about the album Abraxas by Santana.
Oh, man. We have a good week coming up. 333 is Bill Withers. Still Bill.
Still Bill. 332, self-titled Elvis Presley by Elvis Presley, the king.
331 is Like a Prayer by Madonna.
Dude, serious pop chops coming up. Serious pop chops coming up. So, yeah.
Indeed.
So we got a heater of a week.
Anything else you want to say?
Well, no. We got to figure out, listen, like, be gentle with us, people. You have a fucking hellacious week next week.
Yeah?
Yeah, we'll have to figure this out.
Okay.
We'll have to figure out when we're going to record next
week. We'll get it figured out.
Yeah, we'll get it figured out. But, yes. Listen, really, really good stuff coming up for next week. So, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks, as always.
Thanks for listening to us. Yeah.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in early, if you're tuning in.
Yeah. And if you're down to clown and you're...
Like, we'll see you down at the gas.
Yeah, we'll see you down at the gas lamp. Seriously. Love you all. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Cheers. This list sucks. This list sucks. This list sucks. This list sucks. It sucks.